Good evening. My name is Brad Folk, and I'm an alcoholic. I love small meetings. And this is the early bird. I think they got the locals out of the way and are holding off on for the big time speakers. Mr. Brad, that's probably the best thing I've been called in about the last 5 years since I've been doing what I do here in Erie County. How many out-of-town folks we have here tonight? Oh, wow. Okay. Welcome to Erie, and you came even though you heard that I might be speaking tonight anyway, huh? Welcome to Erie, really. It's great to have you here, and I would say right up front, I think Erie, Pennsylvania is probably one of the best AA cities in the United States of America. This is hard. I'm not usually used to speaking in large groups or in public. For you out-of-towners, I'm going to get this out of the way right away. She said, this disease does not discriminate, and I'm neither wealthy, I'm not intelligent. A lot of the people are in Erie, apparently aren't in that smart either, because they elected me district attorney for 2 terms in a row here in Erie, Pennsylvania. I wanted to get that out of the way because a lot of my story tonight revolves not what I do, but who I am. And to that extent, let me say, I am so, so blessed to be a member of this organization. Last April 3rd, a week ago, I celebrated 18 years of continuous sobriety here in Erie. And if it were not for folks like you sitting out there, I'd be dead or in jail or someplace other than the happy place I'm at right now. This program, to me, saved my life. It is the most tremendous experience that I have gone through. I'm continuing to go through, and every day is a blessing. Truly, truly is. And I know everyone in this room feels the same way. Sobriety is a gift to me, and I say it every time I have a chance, whether it be in court, quite frankly, or at meetings, or in my social life. This is a gift. This is such a tremendous gift that has been given to me, and it has been up to me, and it has been up to all of you. And I know there's a lot of folks in here with more sobriety than I have. This is a gift that we cherish, that no one will ever take away, because we never know if that gift will be given back to us. Well, I guess I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Oh, for those of you who have programs for your entertainment, the entertainment committee has a little change. Tomorrow night we have a DUI roadblock in front of the hotel. For your entertainment and possible recruitment. I'm going to tell you a funny story real quick. This just happened to me. No matter how long you've been sober, when I was drinking, I never was pulled over once by the police. Never once. And I couldn't understand it. Just a short time ago, I was coming down Upper Peachtree, which is our main drag here in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I see this state trooper behind me. And he follows me for about 2 miles, lights me up, pulls me over. New transfer from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I roll down my window, and he says to me, "Are you all right?" I said, "I think I'm all right. I'm pretty sure I'm all right." I wasn't getting any of those feelings that you used to get, you know what I mean? If you see a cop, you'd holy moly. Pulls me over. He said, "You all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm great." He says, "You're all over the road." I said, "I am? I don't think I am." He said, "I don't like your attitude." I said, "Well, I'm not all over the road." He said, "When was the last time you had a drink?" I said, "About 17 years and 11 months ago." He says, "I really don't," and this is a true story, "I really don't like your attitude." I said, do you have a camera in your car? He said, yes, sir, I do. I said, dash cam. I said, let me see the film. He said, well, I didn't turn it on. I said, well, tell me what I did wrong. He said, you crossed the center line 6 times, you crossed the fog line 3 times. You're waiting for a punchline. This isn't a joke. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, I think you picked the wrong guy to pull over tonight. He said, sir, I want you to get out of the car. I want to see your driver's license and registration. Now, if he had a brain, he would have run the plate. It would have come back confidential, and it would have been the end of it. I hand him the badge, thinking to myself, well, here's a young trooper. He's going to get back in his car. He's going to say, thanks, Mr. Folk. Have a nice evening. He looks at the badge. He says, what do you think? Just because you're the DA, you can drive all over the road? Now, that proves to you, you can be sober for 100 years, and the cops will still pick on you when you're sober, but they won't pick on you when you're drunk. That is a true story. He's now working out of the Altoona barracks. Really a Johnstown. I was born and raised here in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I have been blessed my whole life. Judging from my lead, like many of us, I think you'll see that I'm an only child. And I have not one single bad memory of growing up. My mom was a Cub Scout mom, and my father was a Little League coach, and we were just talking about Little League with a couple guys I used to play ball with many, many years ago. And I had just an absolutely wonderful life. Both my parents are unfortunately now deceased, but they both got to see me sober for a couple years, and I know that they're up there right now saying, I hope they're saying, that I took advantage of the gift that was given to me 18 years ago. Bad student, terrible student. Went to Cathedral Prep. For you out-of-towners, it's a local parochial all-boys school here in Erie, and I went there freshman, sophomore, junior year, and the last day of my junior year, the Monsignor got on the loudspeaker and said, will the following student please report to Monsignor's office with his locker key and books, which is never a good sign. Was asked to leave Cathedral Prep, and I finished up at a local high school here, Academy High School, in 1965. Terrible, terrible grades. And as you will recall, 1965 was a bad year for people who were not going to school. That was in the height of the Vietnam War, and I don't know why. I was never called. A lot of my friends were. But once again, I was blessed, and I was not called upon to serve. I got a break, and I'm sure my parents did it for me. They never admitted when they helped me out of jams, but I ended up a little school down the highway in Greenville, Pennsylvania called Teal College. I think it was a Lutheran school. Pretty sure it's a Lutheran school. First year, once again, only it wasn't Monsignor's office. Locker keys, books, Brad's out of school again. And it wasn't because of alcohol. I never, ever took a drink or, thank God, did any other substances, illegal substances, no pills, no weed, no coke. And I got shipped off down to a little school in Jackson, Tennessee called Lambeth College. And I went down there and I played a sport down in college, and everything was just really, really hunky-dory. Right after I graduated from college, I was fortunate enough to be able to play professional tennis for a period of time, and kind of just bummed around. I don't think I ever really had a job except being a lawyer. Some of you are going to say that's not a job. It is a job sometimes. My problem started, I think, in 1972 when I started law school in Memphis, Tennessee. I was always one of those guys that thought maybe I was a little smarter and a little slicker than everybody else, and I pretty much could do whatever I wanted to do. And that was my philosophy in life until I came into these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Graduated from Memphis State Law School in 1975 and came back to Erie, Pennsylvania, and that's when it started. I don't reflect back and ask myself, when did I cross the line? I don't know when I crossed the line. It really doesn't matter. I do know that I crossed the line. And when I came back to Erie, Pennsylvania, I had just a terrific job with as a young lawyer, young associate with a law firm here in Erie. And that's when the drinking started. Because I think there is a mentality out there amongst professionals that this disease is not a factor or could never be a factor in their lives. And that is so incorrect and so erroneous. As you pointed out, this is a disease that can affect anybody. Doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, policeman, I don't care who you are, what you do, how much dough you have, who you know. When we step into these rooms, there is not one bit of difference between anybody in this room and myself. Not one bit of difference. They have, I shouldn't make a personal comment on that. We have lawyers' meetings, we have doctors' meetings, we have nurses' meetings, CPA meetings. That's all, in my opinion, and this is only my opinion, disagree, please, if you feel you need to. They do that because they think they're still special. What's special about a drunk lawyer or a drunk doctor, or what's different between a lawyer or a doctor in recovery than anybody else? Not a damn thing. That's why they have the meetings, though. They talk about the law, and they talk about how smart we are and how we out-select people and how much money we make. That's not what it's all about. At any rate, I really started hitting it heavy right after I got out of law school. And I was only out of law school for about 4 years. Yeah, 4 years when the whole thing came crashing down. I practiced law for less than four darn years. And I remember, do we have anybody here from Florida? God bless you. 1979, the Super Bowl was held in Miami, Florida. I don't remember who played, but I remember I left for the Super Bowl in December, late December, and that's when they were playing it in January of 1979. I had the job, I had a Dalmatian, I had an ex-wife, not in that order. I had a great wife, an absolutely terrific wife. Lived in a nice house in a nice neighborhood, and I went to the Super Bowl, and I got to Miami on December 30th, and I remember calling home right at the end of April of the following year, still in Miami, Super Bowl, only lasts 4 or 5 hours, I think. And I just didn't come home. I just did not come home. Lost my job, lost my house, lost my Dalmatian, lost my wife, not in that order. I lost everything, absolutely everything. And I stayed in Florida for the next couple years. And I remember migrating somehow over to Fort Myers, Florida, over on the West Coast. Thought never occurred to me to practice law. Not for a second. The thought never occurred to me to go back home and even pack up the things I had. I just left. I just abandoned life as I knew it and stayed in Florida. And to this day, I look back and I think, what the heck was wrong with you? And then in like 1 second, it occurs to me, duh, you're a .30 when you got on the plane. You're probably a .40 for a year and a half down there. That's what happened to you. And after about a year, I'd run out of friends. I'd run out of money, God knows. And in less than a year, I went from a nice young lawyer, I guess, if you want to call him nice, to a fella who was lucky to get a job in a fast food market called Captain D's Restaurants. They're all over the South. And my job was not defending doctors or practicing law. My job was specifically to make hush puppies and French fries. And that's what I did until I got fired from that job because they served beer in Captain D's and I became intoxicated every day. So I was demoted from working at Captain D's, if that's possible, to cutting greens at the local country club. You know, I can stand up here and smile about it now, but at the time, it was... Well, you know, you all know what it's like. I don't have to tell you what it's like. Every single bad feeling and bad emotion in the world, that's what you feel like. That's what you feel like when you get up in the morning. That's what you feel like when you go to bed at night. And God forbid if you wake up in the middle of the night and need a drink, that's how you feel then too. You're helpless and hopeless and sad and sick and tired of being sick and tired. But I always thought, Brad, you're smart enough, you're slick enough, you're a lawyer, even though you're cutting greens and cooking fish. We'll work out. We'll do this tomorrow. We'll regroup tomorrow. And tomorrow never came. And in 1981 or early 82, I can remember sitting in a terrible, terrible place on Fort Myers Beach. And the only thing that I've been able to equate it to is a candle that burns down and all the wax is gone and the wick is half gone. Boy, y'all are quiet tonight. And the wick is half gone, and it's just a teensy, teensy flicker. That's how my soul, I guess, that's what I was feeling. My soul was about to go out. I never wanted to harm myself or never thought about harming myself, but I could feel that I was dying. I may not have been dying physically, but I was dying spiritually, and I'm sure not long thereafter I would have died physically as well. I remember I pulled myself together the next morning, and I went up to a place called Avon Park, which was a rehab center in Avon Park, Florida, with every single good intention in the world of getting sober, wanting to get sober, just wanting to live on the inside. Stayed 27 days. I couldn't even finish the 28th day. Just like Cathedral Prep. I couldn't finish Cathedral Prep. I couldn't finish Teal College. I could never finish anything. And I left, and I can't tell you why I left. And I went back out, and I kept on drinking. But this time I was smart enough to say, Brad, you better get on a U.S. Air and get back up to Erie, Pennsylvania, where you can mooch off some people, because I'd used up all my chips down there. And came back home and lived with my mom and dad. Pitiful. Mooched off them. Absolutely pitiful. Worse yet, I got a job in the public defender's office. No former clients there, are they? I got a job in the public defender's office and kept it up and kept it up and kept it up. Couldn't stop. Couldn't stop. Every day in court, never drank during the day. But I don't know how many mornings I went to court hungover, drunk. I hope and pray still that I didn't seriously damage anyone's lives in that capacity. 85, it was all over with. I had reached what I thought was the bottom of the barrel. I was living down on the beach in a tent on Kelso Beach. Had a roommate who, by the way, is a lawyer, or was a lawyer. He's sober today, same time that I have. He's down in Georgia. He worked as my first assistant up here for several years before he relocated. He didn't used to drink much before he started hanging out with me. And in a year and a half, he was living in the tent with me. Positive influence on lives. It was just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. I can't tell you the number of times that I've said to myself or did say to myself, I got to tell this story. Tom Kay's here. For those of you from out of town, Tom Kay's got probably 6 months sobriety. What do you got, Tommy? 35 years, something like that. He used to date my mother when they were kids. And my mother was always calling Tommy up. Please, come up and talk to Brad. Please, I beg of you, come up and talk to Brad. I can remember the first time he came up to the house, I pretty much told him I had other important matters to attend to, couldn't talk to him. Get the hell out of my parents' house. It wasn't even my house, but I threw him out of my parents' house. And the second time he came up, he talked to me. And my mom, God bless her, she got into to Al-Anon later on. You know what my mom's only concern was at that time? Because she was in such a state of hopelessness and sadness herself. She says, you know, Tom, Brad's teeth don't look too good. Is that a true story, Tommy? She was worried about my teeth. And kept it up, lived in the tent in the summer and bummed places during the winter months. Erie's not conducive to outdoor living in the wintertime. On April 3rd of 1987, I was sitting in a bar on the Lower East Side of Erie. The clubs were gone. The friends were gone. The job, once again, was gone. Had about two clients. The only clients I had were people that I would meet in bars that got arrested for DUIs. Seriously, they would be stupid enough to come to me. Who the hell's going to come to me as a lawyer? And I looked in the mirror, and this is why I truly believe in my heart, and everyone is different, but I truly, truly believe in my heart that this was a gift from my higher power. This was a gift. I had no bad consequences. I was broke, but I hadn't been arrested yet. I hadn't filed a bankruptcy yet. I had lost everything, but in my own mind, I didn't consider myself down and out that bad. Duh. And I said, I got to stop this. I've got to go somewhere because I can't do this anymore. I was back to that little bit of a wick on a candle. And went home, called some numbers. We used to have two good programs here. Not that we don't have good programs now, but two programs. One was called Serenity. The other was called Hammett Care Unit. Thank you very much. That's where I went, Hammett Care Unit. I didn't want to go to Serenity because I heard you had to work out there washing dishes and stuff like that. And after all, I was a lawyer. Took a shower, hopped in the car. Of course, had to stop at one of our local places downtown here and have about a quadruple rum and coke. Ron Rico 151 was the best. I remember I set myself on fire one night with Ron Rico. The same night I stood up on the bar and stood up in the ceiling fan, almost took my head off. Now, I remember when I checked into the Hammett Care Unit, I told the girl that was doing the assessment on me, like I needed an assessment, that I needed a private room because I had certain matters to attend to. Lawyers have matters to attend to. You have to go to court and represent clients, but I only had two clients, and she assured me that I would have a private room. And I did have a private room that night. And I remember waking up the next morning and, oh my God, talk about the, you all know, I don't even know why I have to describe things to you. You just know how bad you feel from a 2-3 day bender. I woke up and at 6 o'clock, I think they used to wake us up at 6 o'clock, terrible, terrible poached eggs, and the nurse told me that I had a roommate. Now, who do you think would feel worse? Me, as the lawyer, or the guy that came in to be my roommate who was my client?
Oh, no.
Who feels worse, the lawyer that knows he's going to get screwed out of the fee, one of the two fees I had coming, or the client knowing that he's going to jail because his lawyer's in detox? And I'll tell you right now, the 28 days I spent with that guy taught me so many things about life. We couldn't have been different. He was an African-American guy that sold crack for a living here on the streets of Erie. Not little crack amounts either, not a rock here or a rock there. Middleman maybe, ounce, 2 ounces at a time. He finished the program with me, and every single day for those 28 days we talked about who he was, where he was coming from, and in life in general. And when we both walked out of that rehab, I think he knew as much about me as anybody around at the time. Because we tried so hard together for the 28 days, just hour by hour, minute by minute, day by day, to stay in rehab and to stay sober. I remember he had all the books and he'd take notes every day. And he tried very, very hard. And we came out, and unfortunately, he didn't hold on to the gift. And he is in a bad place now. And I had to put him there. That's the hardest part about this program in my job. It is. Because every day, I apologize for getting a little emotional about this, but every day I am reminded that but for the grace of God, that's me. That's me standing there. And there are some folks in the program I know, God bless them, that they're not real fond of me. I think they respect me, but it's hard. It's so hard. To see friends and have friends and lose friends and be in a position where you can't help them with the gift. That's tough. Be that as it may, I'll probably only get emotional one more time. I was only out of rehab about 3 months, and Erie is a relatively small town, maybe not population-wise. I think county is about 300,000 people now. But we only have probably 500 lawyers that practice law here in Erie County. And it's a cliquey town, and people don't like damaged lawyers and damaged doctors or damaged professional people. They don't like them. They don't go to them. They don't respect them. They don't like them. But there was a young man at the time that was district attorney here in Erie County. He's now was our president judge. We just got a new president judge. He was young. I think he was 35 years old when he was elected, and I was obviously much older. I think I was in my early 30s. Maybe it was my early 40s. Can't remember. He brought me in, and he sat me down, because I had known his parents better than I had known him. And he said, "You know, Brad, I think I'd like to give you a chance, and I'd like to give you a job as an assistant district attorney." And I can't tell you how that made me feel, because no one wanted to touch me. No one wanted to help me. Lawyers are funny that way. People are funny that way. You know what? How many friends do we have drinking? Good friends. We thought we're good friends. And how many reached out? And how many stuck by us? And how many are with us today? That's another gift. And I have a lot of good friends in this room. As a matter of fact, most of my friends, I would say, are in this program. At any rate, he told me, he said, "Brad, I'd like to hire you, but I'm going to tell you this. There will be no second chances. Don't come back and tell me you slipped, you had a relapse, you got depressed because your dog got killed by a truck, whatever the reason. Don't come back telling me that you had a problem, because I can't afford to have a liability on this staff." And I understand that now better than I did then. But I was the type of guy that needed that. I said, okay. Because I knew if I had a second chance, I was going to take that second chance. And if I had a third chance, like most of y'all, we're going to take that third chance too. But when I first got out of rehab at that same time, I jumped ahead just a little bit because that guy I will be forever grateful to. We still talk almost every day. 18 years later, we still talk almost every day. He's not in recovery, but we talk. And we talk about sobriety and we talk about recovery. I was so afraid when I got out of that rehab that I was going to relapse. I didn't want to leave, and I'm sure a lot of you that have, gone through rehab have felt the same way. That's a secure environment. You know, there's nothing going to happen to you in there. You feel safe and secure and warm, and I didn't want to leave. But when I did leave, that very first night that I was out, I think I got discharged about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I went right to a meeting. And I recall, here I am 28 days, I felt better than I've ever felt in my life. I weighed more than I do now, which isn't saying a lot, but I weighed a little bit more than I do now. And I thought, boy, you're slick tonight. I looked down, I've got 2 different shoes on. One was a tie, one was a loafer. I said, oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sober, I could put on the same type of shoes, for crying out loud. And little stuff like that happened for a long time, and I kept saying to myself, geez, it doesn't seem like you're getting any better. You still seem a little disoriented, and you're just not yourself. But I kept coming back. Every single night, I'll bet you for the first 2 years out of rehab, I came to a meeting. And once again, for me, that's the only thing that would have worked. That's the only thing that would have worked. Obviously, I stayed, no pun intended, with the program. But after about 5 years, I stopped going to meetings. I thought I had the gift, and the gift was never going to leave me. And I almost took a header, simply because I didn't talk to people. I didn't go to meetings. There's some folks in here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about drug court in a minute, but... I say this all the time to the people in court. We are so fortunate here in Erie County to have a drug court for first-time offenders, and a few of them are here tonight. And I make it a point usually to go to drug court every single week, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that's what I'm doing now, and that's the best thing going. And I almost slipped. I almost went back out, because once again it crept back into my head that I was smarter and slicker, the old dirty thinking. And I didn't need you folks, and I didn't need meetings. But thank God that only lasted for a short period of time, and I came back in. I don't go as often as I should now, by some standards, I guess. But if I'm having a bad day, if things are bad at the office, if things are bad with me personally, and God knows I have a lot of bad days, getting sober doesn't get rid of the bad days or the stress or life. I know where to go. May not be 3 people in the room. Or I may go to some of my friends in the courthouse, and we'll have a meeting at the courthouse, 3-4 people. So I'm very big on the meeting aspect. At any rate, after my buddy was elected judge, I was thinking about running for DA. This would have been in 1995. And I can't tell you how many people, not you people, how many people that I thought were good advisors said, you cannot run for district attorney, you're a recovering alcoholic, they will kill you. These politicians will eat you alive. They'll bring up every bad thing that you've ever done. They'll tell everybody your little dark secret. And by this time, I had told everybody my secret. I didn't think it was so dark. Bad judgment, but I didn't think it was so dark. Really, they told me, you can't do this. And I listened to them. And that was in 1995. Late 94, early 95. And I bailed out of that race. Shouldn't have, but I did. I should have listened to you people. Because we can do anything we want to do. Anything. If I can go from living on a damn in a damn tent on Kelso Beach, not that what I do is any big deal. At least I'm smart enough to know I'm a small fish in a small pond, unlike some other people in this town. Any of them here? I didn't run. I went and took another job with the state attorney general's office, and I came back to Erie, and I listened to you people, and I ran, and I won. I won against my best friend that was living in a tent with me on Kelso Beach, believe it or not. I say honest to God's truth. We used to go to events together with our arm around each other. He was much smarter than I am, much smarter. Not as good a trial lawyer, but he was much smarter. I ran, first time I ran was in 1999, and I won, but for the grace of God, and coming to these meetings, and listening to what you people say, and doing the right thing for the right reason. This isn't hard stuff. You do what you're supposed to do, you do what you know is right in your heart, and you try to help other people. And right after I was elected, I fought back to what I used to do when I was an assistant DA, and that was put people in jail, and this does not sound like a prosecutor talking, over and over and over and over and over again, the same people for a rock or two rocks of crack cocaine, for a joint, whatever, and it was a revolving door. And we put these same 18, 19, 20-year-old kids in jail and would lock them up, and they'd come back out. We wouldn't offer many programs. We wouldn't offer many rehabilitation. And that isn't what you people taught me to do. You taught me to reach out and help people. And to give people the benefit of the doubt and look at people. Remember? So in 2000, we started a drug court for first-time nonviolent offenders. Everybody said, you're nuts. We elected you to be a prosecutor, not worry about rehabilitation. Baloney. That's not true. I'm a recovering alcoholic first, I'm a DA second. That's how I look at it. And the same people that told me not to run in 1995 started telling me how to run my damn office. Well, guess what? You didn't get 60,000 votes. I did. And the same police officers that tell me how to run my office, they got no votes, none, zero, zip, and they're not telling me how to run my office, whether I'm a sober DA or a drunken DA. And now we go through probably a couple hundred people a year that we provide rehabilitation to, that we provide programs to, we provide social programs to, and they're not reoffending. They're in these rooms. I can see a whole bunch of them. We have drug court graduation once a year. The crowd is tremendous. But for the grace of God, goes on. I don't judge anybody anymore. I don't need to. They know how I feel about them. I may yell at them because they're not going to meetings or whatever. Now we have people coming from all over the states to Erie, Pennsylvania, to look at our model drug court, to show how AA, CA, NA, how they all are active in our community. That's why I said I think we have one of the best towns in the United States for sobriety. We have a club here for you out-of-towners called the Alkanon Club. I know, it's the oldest club dedicated solely for the purpose and the mission of recovering alcoholics in the United States. It was founded in, 1950? 1950. I go to it often. It's just unbelievable what this program has taught me, what this program has given me. I had to run again for re-election a couple years ago. Still here. I can remember. Let me tell you this story. The second time I ran, they invited me to go on talk radio. Talk radio is the worst format in the world. Bad business, talk radio. I said, don't go on. Somebody's going to call. Somebody's going to cause problems. They're going to bring up the alcohol again. And believe me, I am so proud of being a recovering alcoholic and so grateful that I am. I don't care who calls in, please. Now, I remember this lady called in. I had convicted her 5 years before for ethnic intimidation. She had beaten two young African-American children with a rebar. They were like 5 and 7, and her defense at the time of trial was that they were members of the Bloods and the Crips from Cleveland, Ohio. Thank God 12 people didn't buy that. She calls in, she says, Mr. Folk, she said, would you be willing to release your medical records? I said, why do you ask? And as soon as I heard her voice, the old hag, I remembered her. Honest to God, I did. As soon as I heard her voice, I remembered. I said, why don't you just ask me what you want to ask me? She said, would you release your medical records? I said, no, I won't release my medical records. I said, ask me what you want to know. I'll tell you. Were you ever treated for alcoholism? You know, like I should just shrivel up and die like the Wizard of Oz witch. I said, absolutely. That is who I am. That is part of my being. I'm now a recovering alcoholic. I'm proud of it. I don't hide. And by coming to this conference this weekend, none of you are hiding. Look at this place. They don't get crowds this big for any other event ever during the course of the year in the city of Erie. Seriously, we don't fill this ballroom, do we? You locals, do we fill this ballroom like we're filling it tonight? This is unbelievable. I brought a friend with me tonight. He said, where are you going? I told him where I was going. He said, how many people are going to be there? I said, well, I think there are about 700 people registered. 700 people? That's more people than voted for my opponent last time. Kidding, kidding, kidding. That's a joke. I'm just kidding. I shouldn't say that. There was something else I was going to say about that drug court, and I can't remember. It's kind of ironic that that I'm up here tonight. It truly is. I had a talk the other day with one of my friends. Even before I was invited to speak here, and I was scared to death. Honest to God, before I got up here tonight, I was scared to death, and I don't know why. I've led 100 times, but I don't know why. It's hard to talk to folks that know exactly what I'm talking about. Words seem so insufficient. They really do. They seem so insufficient to talk about gratitude. They seem so insufficient to talk about blessing. But we try, and we try to communicate to each other. But oftentimes, I'll go to meetings, I'll just sit there and say a couple words and look at a couple people, and I know what they're saying, and they know what I'm saying. You're right. This is a disease of the many. It doesn't discriminate in its onset. It doesn't discriminate in how we go about recovering. And to me, there's only one way to recover from the disease of alcoholism, and that is through the AA program and the 12 steps that we live in and literally die by. It is such an honor for me to be here and talk to you tonight. I probably won't fill up the full hour, but thank you for my sobriety. Thank you for giving my life back to me. I'm not as slick as I thought I was. God bless you. I hope you enjoy the weekend. We have a great forecast. We have a lot of tremendous things to do. We have a park here in Erie that gets more visitors per year than Yellowstone National Park. I'm not with the Chamber of Commerce, but I'll let you know when the roadblock's set up. Isn't it great? Isn't this great? God bless you and thank you.